across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Tuesday morning, August 27th, 2024. It's another beautiful morning here across Wisconsin to have you here up north from wherever you're listening on the Civic Media Radio Network or on the Civic Media app or through social media or on demand by podcast. Nice to have you along. I got a question for you, mostly a question for, well, Greg as well, but here's my question for you. Aren't BLTs the best? I had a bacon, lettuce, tomato sandwich for dinner last night, and it's the perfect light summer sandwich. Here with an opposing viewpoint. Here with an opposing viewpoint is Greg Buck.
Disgusting.
Okay. That's enough of that. We apparently ignited something yesterday with Greg's hot take that he is not a fan of what you lovingly refer to as the trash sandwich.
Yes.
That is the BLT, which coincidentally was happening as it was planned in the Kreitlow kitchen last night. And I have to say, maybe it was just spite I was tasting, but it was one of the most delicious BLTs we've ever made.
You posted on Twitter about it. It was a spite sandwich. Okay, please don't. Okay. There's no such thing as a delicious BLT.
Oh, come on. Where did this start?
It's a salad. That's all it is. It's a salad held together by two big croutons. That's it. Because it's lettuce, tomato, and bacon.
Yeah,
that's it. That's not a
sandwich. What good meat sandwich isn't meat with some lettuce and tomato?
But bacon's barely a meat for a sandwich. Like, you put bacon on the sandwich, it's an addition. It's not the main. It's not the star of the show. It's a feature player on SNL at best.
Oh, I can't believe a red-blooded American male is saying this about bacon.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't love bacon as much as everybody else does, apparently. I think bacon's fine. It does its job. It's, you know, it's a carcinogen. But the point is, and here's the other thing, too, Pat. I'll just say this very quickly, and then, you know, I'll only talk about this later today and then during the show, Matt and Aaron, and probably to myself, to the dog. But people will say, like, well, you know what you do is you throw an egg on there. Well, then that's just an egg sandwich then with some bacon. That's not a BLT. Oh, you put some avocado. That's not a BLT then. It is a different sandwich when you add a fourth letter. So when you just give me bacon, lettuce, and tomato. Okay, cool. Why did you stop there? Why did you, did you run out of ingredients?
We could just do this all day with whether something is a sandwich or is not a sandwich.
Based on
Greg's point of view. Yes.
I accept that it's a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
I accept that fact.
Mm-hmm.
But I do not accept that it's a good sandwich or a filling sandwich. Take a BLT, cut it in four pieces, put it on a plate, and if you serve that as an appetizer, okay, here we go. Get me started. Then we're going to order our entree. But you expect me to eat that as, like, the meal? Get out of my house.
Here's what else is coming up this morning on Up North News Radio. We talked to Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren while she was barnstorming across Wisconsin yesterday on behalf of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. And so we talk a bit about her advice to Wisconsin Democrats when it comes to running and talking about the past 4 years in terms of accomplishments. We also ask her about J.D. Vance's recent claim that Donald Trump would veto a national abortion ban if such a bill reached his desk. Meanwhile, we'll talk about Donald Trump shamelessly using Arlington National Cemetery to politicize American troops killed in Afghanistan. In our second hour, it is just about harvest time in Wisconsin, and it looks to be another healthy crop for cranberries in a state that overwhelmingly grows the most. We'll look at the impact of the industry on the state economy. Also, it looks like American agriculture dodged a bullet from up in Canada, where a massive railroad strike, it looks like it won't happen after all, something that could have had a huge impact on Wisconsin exports. And it reminds us to take note that railroad workers in the U.S. Also narrowly avoided a strike. But I don't know that enough people have done the follow-up to tell you that since that time, railroad workers in the U.S. have won some big victories at the bargaining table. So we'll cover that and much more today, along with your texts, phone calls, questions, comments at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You can watch Up North News Radio on our Facebook page for Up North News, the Facebook page for Civic Media, and also the YouTube page for Up North News. And if you put something in the comment section there, we will see it and potentially put it up on screen and respond to it. Or you can email us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And please don't forget about that Civic Media app. It is a great way to listen to us live or find a station that's near you, learn more about the shows that you can listen to. You can go to the website, civicmedia.us, for podcast links and much more. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot will be here in under an hour now. Tell us about round two of thunderstorms that are just moving into Wisconsin right now. The radar shows that a line of heavy rain and thunder, lots of lightning, just now crossing into St. Croix, Polk, and Pepin counties, Pierce County. There's also a thin line of thunderstorms that has just formed basically between Wausau and Marquette. And then there was that massive system that has finally moved out now and is moving across lower Michigan. But it was, boy, was it. It was, Greg, how do we describe yesterday? I mean, is steamy enough? And I don't know, maybe it wasn't by you, but with a heat index reading approaching 110 in the La Crosse area, it was a little toasty.
Oh, it was just, it was gross. It was really hot. It was. Down. We would only let Maybell out for like a minute so she could go to the bathroom and come right back in. And it was, no, I don't. And this morning when I left the house, it was 81 degrees.
Just
at least give me like 70 degrees in the early, early morning and then it can get hotter. But like when you walk out, I've said this before, it's dark outside and it's hot. You're like, that's not fair. That's not fair.
It's kind of like the last blast, basically, because I mean, Labor Day's coming. It's apparently going to be back in the 70s next week for highs. And it's extremely rare to do this, you know, mid-90s stuff after that. So this might be it, and hopefully so. There was a guy with one of those lawn care places going by as I was getting the garbage cans, and my glasses were fogging up when I stepped outside.
Yeah.
That thing that only happens in the wintertime on the cold days happened on one of the hot days. And this poor fella is like, yeah, I've got to do, you know, 18 lawns or whatever it is. So
no.
I hope he and I hope Rob and Tigerton and everybody else stayed very well hydrated.
I have a question for Rob he can answer down the road when he gives us his weather report. Mm-hmm. Is there too hot for him where he says, I can't do the lawns today. It's just too hot. Can't, I got to take care of myself. That's what question for Rob. He can answer whenever he wants. That's all I want to know. Because I want to know he's taking care of himself.
Right. Well, so would I. But I also know that some people would write in that their answer is, well, only if I can still pay the rent. You know, some people feel like they don't have a choice.
Yeah, I guess.
They got to make the money. It's very unfortunate. So, everybody stay hydrated and everything for one more day. And then hopefully we'll get a nice cool down after that. You can get our daily newsletter at Up North News. Sign up at our website, upnorthnewswi.com. And in today's edition, in case you missed our conversation earlier on the radio, a Wisconsin woman went through quite an ordeal when she endured a catastrophic pregnancy and required abortion care late in that pregnancy, including having to go through, you know, a mob yelling at her to go through this tragic situation. Well, now she's trying to grow her family through IVF and is once again facing the wrath of a political class that wants to tell her what she can and can't do. So we've got that story in our newsletter. Now, we also have a link to a past radio segment where we discussed how Project 2025 is killing school lunches for a lot of children if it were to pass, if it were to be implemented. And Christina Laurie has a story about why now is the time to head to pumpkin farms, not necessarily for the pumpkins. They might not be ready yet, But for sunflowers and wagon rides and music and all kinds of things to do on a nice weekend. So look for those ideas and more in our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. All right, now we've already spoken at length yesterday about former President Trump coming to the La Crosse area on Thursday, Thursday night, I believe it is, which... Somebody said, Greg, I don't remember if this was during the show or after the show, that's also move-in day. Oh, it was after the show. Yeah, apparently that's also move-in day Thursday at UW La Crosse. And so that is going to be one crazy busy campus on Monday.
Given there are going to be a lot of upset fathers.
Yes, there are. We're in a parking spot. You know? And if anybody who's working for the college Democrats or college Republicans, boy, they start their school year off, strong out of the gates. So it's going to be busy. So we've talked about that, but also J.D. Vance is now coming back to Wisconsin as well. He is scheduling a visit to De Pere tomorrow, and it has been said that the visit will be about the economy, inflation, and energy. And all I'm going to say about that is, again, much like Eric Hovde's campaign, if all you're going to say is the economy is bad, inflation is terrible, excuse me, and energy is expensive, and you got nothing else to say in terms of what are you going to do about it, then I think you may be wasting your time. I mean, traditionally, sad to say, it's often been enough for a candidate to just complain about something. And if you complain about it enough, people go, yeah, he's right or she's right. I'm unhappy about this too. And my hope is that the voters are a little bit more savvy in terms of recognizing that somebody is complaining, but not actually proposing anything. And that has been Trump's big thing. I went back and looked at his remarks from this past weekend at an event. And again, he just keeps saying things will go back to how they were when I was president, which first off, really? But second, how are you going to do that, cowboy? You can't just say things are going to go back to how they were. That's a promise that you, not only can't keep, you don't even know why you're saying that because you have no idea. But listen to see if there's any details from Vance or Trump in this week's visits. We'll talk more about the news next, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Tuesday morning. When you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Oh, this is a sad page in today's history lesson on the calendar related to the man who's responsible for our opening theme, Stevie Ray Vaughan. We'll have that and more details coming up about 30 minutes from now on this Tuesday morning, August the 27th. The Brewers were off yesterday. They are home for a very quick three-game homestand against the San Francisco Giants. First pitch tonight is at 7:10, pregame at 6:35. On Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Racine Kenosha, Park Falls, and Oshkosh. The Badger football team opens up its season and has its home opener this Friday night against Western Michigan University of Kalamazoo. Badger coach Luke Fickle saying this might be the least they've ever known about a potential opponent, not just because it's a small school, but because they've had some coaching changes as well. So that game will kick things off for the Badgers, who then have a challenging schedule, including hosting Alabama at some point, playing USC as well in the newly realigned Big Ten. So Badger football, again, getting going this coming weekend. I am not sure who at Arlington National Cemetery gave the green light for former President Donald Trump to come use such hallowed ground as a campaign prop, but that's what happened yesterday. Under the guise of honoring 13 American men and women who were killed in a terrorist attack in Afghanistan in the waning days of the fighting there, Donald Trump has not stopped by there previously to honor those 13 because there wasn't an election campaign going on at the time. Let's keep in mind that those 13 people who were killed in a terrorist bombing in the waning days of the Afghanistan conflict, the waning days set in motion by the Trump administration in its dealings directly with the Taliban. Let's keep in mind that these men and women are American heroes. They deserve every bit of honor and recognition they can get, including yesterday. The recognition is deserved. So we take nothing away from their honor and sacrifice in noting that there were many, many instances where there were more American casualties in any one day, in any one attack in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And yet we don't see the same commemorations happening for those many, many men and women. Why is that? Because the only reason we know as much or we hear as much about this particular attack is because it came in the waning days of Afghanistan. President Biden was criticized ceaselessly by Republicans for the chaotic end to the fighting and the American presence in Afghanistan. And to be quite frank, the Biden administration did not do nearly enough to point out the way that its hands had been tied and the Afghan government's hands had been tied by the way the Trump administration in its waning days dealt with the Taliban and set events in motion that inevitably led to that chaotic exit from Afghanistan. So the terror attack, the last significant one on U.S. forces there, was a very bitter final chapter in the U.S. presence there. But it has been politicized, and it has been politicized in a shameless and insulting manner. And so for the president of the United States, the former president, to show up on some of the country's most hallowed ground, and then to pose for pictures in front of the gravestones of at least one or more of the victims of that day, says to me all that really needs to be said about the campaign of somebody who dodged the draft with bone spurs, allegedly, and has said what he has said about people who are killed in battle or who are captured and taken prisoner of war. He, remember, spoke recently that if he were reelected, he would fire all the generals and replace them with college football coaches and race car drivers. Remember that we played that audio from a couple of weeks ago. This is not a man with any respect whatsoever for anybody, not just the military, not just for generals, but for anybody who is not a yes man and who does not placate him when he says, why don't we drop nuclear weapons into hurricanes to try to break them up? Why don't we use the military to shoot Americans who are protesting in the streets and exercising their First Amendment rights? So as you can tell, there are a lot of people, myself included, who were plenty insulted yesterday. There were very sincere and respectful statements put out by President Biden and by Vice President Kamala Harris yesterday. And that's where it should have been left, to use Arlington National Cemetery as a prop to just continue a political attack when you haven't done the same for every other significant loss of life in Afghanistan and Iraq, just speaks volumes about how some politicians will sink to any level possible to try to get votes, rather than actually trying to solve the big problems that Americans are facing. One of the problems Americans were facing was that we'd been in Afghanistan for 20 years. The Trump administration for whatever little credit you want to give it, was trying to put together some kind of an exit strategy. But in doing so, again, put conditions in place that made that exit significantly harder on whoever was going to follow Trump in office. And in this case, it was Joe Biden. I'll tell you who it will not be that succeeds Biden in office. It will not be Jill Stein. But she will be on the ballot here in Wisconsin and can play a role in putting Donald Trump back in office. Jill Stein will remain on the ballot after the Wisconsin Supreme Court decided yesterday not to hear a Democratic challenge that was seeking to oust her. Democrats are rightly concerned that third-party candidates could draw votes away from Kamala Harris and help Donald Trump. That could be a deciding factor. The number of votes that Jill Stein got last time around was more than enough to make up the difference. It made the difference in 2016 when Hillary Clinton fell short in Wisconsin as well. But the court decided against hearing a challenge that sought to oust Stein from the ballot. The court did not explain its reasoning, only said that they will not take any action or hear the case. The argument said that the Green Party can't nominate presidential electors in Wisconsin because the party does not have any state office holders or legislative candidates authorized to nominate presidential electors. And that gets back to what we said this time yesterday, that we could probably use a genuine third party in Wisconsin and a fourth and a fifth and build coalitions the way that pretty much every other democracy does. We're locked into this two-party system. But whether it's the Green Party or some of these other groups, until they start trying to build local support and get local electeds and don't just pop up every 4 years, they're not genuine candidates. They're grifters and spoilers. We'll hear from Elizabeth Warren on her trip to Wisconsin coming up next. You're up north. See? Don't freak out until you know the facts. Relax. Don't be stupid. You know I love you. Don't be ridiculous. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren has some strong words for J.D. Vance. We're about to hear from her and just a moment as she barnstorms across Wisconsin. I love still using that term. I mean, barnstorming originally dealt with when you would take small planes and fly from town to town and talk to people on the campaign trail. It's kind of right up there with, soapbox. Nobody gets up on their soapbox anymore, literally, either. But they're great terms to have, especially when somebody still understands the spirit of using them. And that's what Elizabeth Warren was doing in Wisconsin yesterday and again today. Barnstorming. Getting up on her soapbox and talking to a bunch of small audiences around the state. Not everything has to be a rally with 12,000 people. I mean, trust me, that those are big events. They're TV friendly. They're terrible for parking and on hot days and everything that I can attest to from the Harris Walls rally in Eau Claire recently. They have their place. But there's really something to be said for surrogates who are willing to go and make a whole lot of smaller visits to reach people all across an area, whether it's Wisconsin or something else. And Elizabeth Warren's not only doing that in Wisconsin this week, she also did it at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago last week with a visit to the Wisconsin delegation during their state delegation breakfast and other state delegations, of course, as well, to raise some very important points for voters about the presidential election when it comes to women's reproductive health rights and when it comes to the economy and whether somebody has a plan or if they're just going to carp about it, as we said a few moments earlier. So I caught up with Senator Warren in between Wisconsin stops yesterday afternoon. So let's give a little listen to our conversation with Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, who was barnstorming at the time. Senator Elizabeth Warren, thank you for joining us again on Up North News. Nice to hear from you.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always good to visit with you.
Now, you got a chance to visit with the Wisconsin Convention delegation last Thursday morning, I believe it was. And the headline that came out of that was telling the assembled Democratic delegates to be proud to run as a Democrat and to run on a record of accomplishments over the past 4 years. And Senator, as somebody who has run as a Democrat, I will tell you, you and I both know that hasn't always been the case. People have shied away from the D word. And apparently that's not only okay to use, but is getting a big thumbs up from you.
You bet it is. Because this is how I look at it. Right now, where we are in this race, it's all about contrast. And Donald Trump and the Republicans are the folks, for example, who think that the government ought to decide whether or not a woman has access to abortion, whether contraception, whether a family can get access to IVF. Kamala Harris and the Democrats are the ones saying that put us in and we will make Roe versus Wade laws the land again. And women and doctors will be able to make their own decisions. That's a pretty sharp difference. And it's not just a difference between the two candidates at the top. It's a difference up and down the ballot. It's a difference at the state house. It's a difference in city councils. And it matters because, you know, right now we live in a country where nearly 40% of all women live in a state that effectively bans abortion. And if Donald Trump and J.D. Vance take the White House, it's not going to be 40%. It's going to be 100%. But Democrats are committed to protecting the freedom of every single individual to make that choice for themselves and to keep the government out of it. So I think when you stand up and say, I'm a Democrat, you're standing up for freedom. You're standing up for the power of women to be able to make those decisions. And you ought to do it loud and you ought to do it proud.
So forgive me for being speculative, but I'm going to phrase it this way. What do you think J.D. Vance was really thinking when he answered that question over the weekend and said he believed President Trump, if reelected, would veto a national abortion ban bill?
You know, I've really had to think, do you think that women are stupid? Do you think that after you've gotten up and bragged about blocking access to abortion, after Donald Trump has gotten up just last week, once again, bragging about how he put in the extremist Supreme Court that got rid of Roe versus Wade and lets governments block access to abortion, that somehow we're all going to say, oh, wow, you guys are the ones to trust on this? That's just not happening. And I want to be, if you'll let me just for a sec here, I want to be kind of wonky about this because I know Wisconsin has really had to dig into this issue recently. The part I want to underscore is there's an old law on the books. You in Wisconsin know about these old laws on the books, right,
oh, yes,
that were written a long time ago. There's one at the federal level called the Comstock Act, and it's still on the books, and it technically says you can't mail, you can't send around any medication or any equipment that could be used in an abortion. You're not allowed to do that. And basically hadn't been enforced for a bazillion years. There are some people who think it can't even be enforced at this point, but here's the thing. As Project 2025 has pointed out, it's still there on the books. And if Donald Trump is president, he can put in the right person over the Department of Justice to go sue to enforce the Comstock Act. And you take it to the extremist Supreme Court that's there right now, and they will give it their blessing. And if you think that sounds a little far-fetched, understand just a few months ago, J.D. Vance sent a letter to the Department of Justice telling them to do exactly that. So the idea that these guys want to come in now and try to gaslight Americans and say, oh, well, I understand it turns out that what we've said about abortion and contraception and IVF is pretty unpopular. So we'll see if we can just lie to you and somehow fool you into trusting us. And I just got to say that we're not falling for this. We are not trusting our daughters' futures, our granddaughters' futures, to two guys who have bragged about blocking access to abortion, who think that should be a government decision instead of the freedom of families to make for themselves.
I wonder if that same bit of rhetorical sleight of hand is going on with the economic issues, because I know you've been mixing it up with certain talking heads on TV who want to look at rules against price gouging and conflate it with price fixing. So I'd like you to lay out the case when I'm sure it'll come from Eric Hovde against Tammy Baldwin, certainly from Trump and Vance, that a Harris-Walz administration would engage in price fixing as opposed to what price gouging does to consumers.
Absolutely. And thanks for raising this one, Pat. So, as you may know, about three dozen states, including Wisconsin, have price gouging laws, and they're not price fixing. They don't say here's how prices have to be set or here's what all prices are. All that these laws say are that when there are extraordinary circumstances, there's been a fire, there's been a pandemic, there's been a hurricane. In a case like that, if you've got a seller who comes in and starts charging $10 a bottle for water, you've got a seller who starts coming in and charging, $100 a sheet for plywood. Then the local attorney general can say, yo, you can't do that. No. And Wisconsin has used these laws before, Democrat and Republican administrations. And by the way, when I say it's about three dozen states, understand that states like Texas and Florida use these laws all the time. And it's the way I think of it, it's a curb on markets. When markets go haywire because something has gone wrong in the market, you've got a powerful monopolist or you've got an emergency that's happened, it's a way to have just one more tool in the toolbox to say, no, you're not going to be able to do that. And often, simply threatening them with a price gouging law brings those prices right back down. So what Kamala Harris and Tammy Baldwin and I are all supporting is to say, let's take a sensible law like that that's already used in the majority of states. Let's take it national. And the reason to take it national is that where families are getting gouged now is not so much in one part of Wisconsin where there's been a terrible storm. They're getting gouged all across the country by these giant corporations, corporations like Hershey that sell 40% of all the candy and sweets in the country, companies like Kraft, companies like a giant egg producer called Cal-Maine that saw its profits increase not just a little, didn't just pass along costs from inflation, saw its profits go up 718%. So this is one more tool in the toolbox. When these guys, not just passing along cost increases, but who are actually using an opportunity to take advantage of families, we're going to have at least one tool in the toolbox to be able to put a stop to that. And to me, here's the main thing. What's Donald Trump's plan to lower the cost of groceries? Nothing. He's got nothing. And what would you expect from a guy who's probably never had to worry about paying a grocery bill? But Kamala Harris, she's got a plan on the table, one that's proven effective in Wisconsin, and she wants to take it national. And Tammy Baldwin and I want to help her do that.
Senator Elizabeth Warren, thank you again for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Caught up with Senator Warren in between stops in Wisconsin. She's got a couple of more today doing some barnstorming for the Harris-Walz ticket. And that would continue under a Harris-Walz administration. But we've talked about them here previously. And that would be, taking care of the junk fees that are out there, the hidden charges, all the things that seem small, but if you don't stop them, they only get bigger. They snowball on consumers. And somebody eventually has to call companies out on that. And that you know, Republicans are now saying that that's some kind of a socialist or communist measure, when the fact of the matter is the people that they're calling socialists are probably better capitalists than they are. Capitalism requires a referee. It always has. Going back to Adam Smith when he first wrote about it, capitalism requires a referee, because otherwise it's not capitalism. It's kleptocracy. We use the term Wild West now, you know, Wild West capitalism, where, you know, vultures can essentially prey on consumers and their workers and the environment. Which, by the way, takes me to a new campaign ad from Congressman Derek Van Orden. You just heard how Elizabeth Warren said, you know, what's Donald Trump's plan? And the same can be said of Eric Hovde, Derek Van Orden, and all the rest. What's your plan? Well, Derek Van Orden's new ad mentions red tape 3 or 4 times. Says, we're going to get rid of the red tape. Going to get rid of the red tape. And I'm married to one of the smartest women I've ever met. And she looked at that and said, what is red tape? And I mean, she already knew the answer. It was more rhetorical, but just to confirm it, I said, those are the things that some people, especially Republicans, call regulations. They're protections. They're protections for the consumer. They're protections for the employees. They're protections for the environment. But big corporations don't like them, so they refer to them as red tape. So when you're supporting somebody like a Derek Van Orden, whose only promise is to get rid of quote-unquote red tape, it means it's going to be easier for products to be less safe, for employment to be less secure, and for our air and water to be less clean. Now you know. We'll have today's history lesson coming up right after this. You're up north.
If you're gonna play in Texas, you gotta have a fiddle in the band. That lead guitar is hot, but not for a Louisiana man. So rosin up that both of faded love and let's all dance. If you're gonna play in Texas, you gotta have a fiddle in the band.
Today's history lesson begins with the anniversary of the birth of the late Jeff Cook, the lead guitarist and fiddle player for Alabama, who passed away a couple of years ago. It's a little kind of a bittersweet history lesson today, as you'll hear when we close things out as well. But on to happier notes, there was this great Fats Domino song from 1955. It hit number 10, and that was the first R&B song to hit the top 10 on the pop chart was this one by Fats Domino.
You made me cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain.
It was a wonderful thing for this to become the first R&B song to get on the top 10 pop chart, but as often happened in the 1950s, you couldn't leave well enough alone. It would chart again 3 weeks later as the number one song, but not by Fats Domino.
Oh, no.
By Pat Boone.
Oh, God.
I know. Just want to go back to 1950s America.
Is that not a shame?
Is that not a shame? Oh, Pat Boone. All right. Let's move our way up to 1964, 60 years ago today. Happy birthday to the Mary Poppins Disney movie, a Sherman Brothers musical featuring Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke.
Jim, chimney, chim, chimney, chim, chim, cheree. A sweep is as lucky can be.
How would you describe Dick Van Dyke, his singing and dialect throughout this movie?
An almost offensive accent. But the greatest version of an English accent done by an American actor. God bless you. Dick Van Dyke, live in health. I think he's 98 and still kicking. So.
98, that's right. Wow, can't believe that movie's 60 years old now.
Yeah.
On this date in 1988, it's a song you heard a lot in 1988, maybe a little bit after that, but then a whole lot after Luke Combs covered it. But Tracy Chapman's self-titled debut album was the number one album this day in 1988 because of this single.
I still get goosebumps when I hear this intro.
Is it because of the duet they did?
No, I mean just
or just the, just the carousel,
the guitar part. Just the guitar part. It's just so quiet and.
You get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. The single itself peaked at number 6, but it was the number 1 album this week in 1988. Fast forward 3 years, and Pearl Jam was brand new on the music scene. They released their debut album, 10, on this day in 1991. So while we're talking about 1990s rock, this is, I guess, the appropriate place to ask this question. The news story, it says that the Brit pop band known as Oasis and known for its timeless hits like Wonderwall and Don't Look Back in Anger is reuniting for a tour next summer, ending a 15-year hiatus because of a long feud between brothers Liam and Noel Gallagher, who make up Oasis.
Yeah.
Now, again, I'm asking this as a 60-year-old man who spends a lot of time listening to yacht rock. Do they deserve all the accolades that there's been so much angst over the years about, will they get back together? Oh, we miss them so much. Why are these brothers fighting? And I guess I know the one song, Wonderwall. Should I appreciate them more?
I think you should. I really do. And I'll say that because I didn't appreciate Oasis for a very long time. And then a friend of mine, a fellow musician, sat me down and he's like, listen to these songs. Just listen to them as, like, how well-constructed they are. Noel Gallagher is an amazing songwriter. Some can say he does a fair amount of ripping off from older artists, which is fair. I mean, but then again, find me a song that doesn't sound like a song. but they are great pop rock songs. It started off this Brit pop sound with them and Blur. And they're saying they're ending the 15-year hiatus, but they're not saying they're ending the 50-year feud between these two guys I want to know what the logistics of getting them to the gigs are going to be, because I don't think they got into a room and said, all right, brother, I love you. They hate each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, they weren't the only ones. There have been other acts over time, you know, that it took a lot of money to get them back together. Like, don't ask us to be nice to each other, but if you're a fan, you're going to be happy with this new tour, apparently.
They're going
to
play stadiums and make tens of millions of dollars.
I guess. Well, talk about playing in stadiums and arenas. Let's go back to Pat's genre of music, Jackson Browne, 1977. You hear these songs on the radio and you hear the audience and you go, I wonder where that was recorded, that one concert lives in immortality. And for Jackson Browne, it includes Running on Empty and The Loadout with Stay. And those were recorded on this day in 1977 in Columbia, Maryland. Naturally, I picked the beginning of the song so you can't hear the audience cheering and everything, but you know the song.
They're there.
And you know that it was recorded this day in 1977 at the Meriwether Post Pavilion in Columbia, Maryland. All right, we said we were going to close things out on a kind of a sad note. Stevie Ray Vaughan, who does the song Crossfire that leads our show here. He died in a helicopter crash in near East Troy on this day in 1990. following a concert at Alpine Valley, where earlier in the evening, he'd appeared with, I mean, what a lineup at Alpine Valley that evening. Robert Cray, Buddy Guy, Eric Clapton, and his older brother, Jimmy Vaughn. So let's play a little bit of Stevie here. And again, somebody that I appreciate some of the songs. I just never seem to get too deep into an artist. And he's on my list of, I need to start listening to more of these albums, you know, from top to bottom.
Yeah.
Here's Look at Little Sister, while we remind you that more coming up in our next hour, including talking with Hans Breitenmoser about the Wisconsin cranberry crop looking to be pretty good this year. Back after this on Up North News Radio.